football on Off the Ball.
I mean, how mentally weak are the lads? You know, I was as mentally weak as they come. I couldn't stay tuned in a game for 90 minutes. I'd be singing Journey, Don't Stop Believing and go missing in my head time after time in games.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
It was definitely tough. You're a 6-year-old girl, you're the only girl on the team. The young lads see a girl coming into the team, it's a bit like, oh, we don't want to pass her the ball, or we don't want to tackle her because we don't want to hurt her. You have to fight for everything that you got. Me wanting to be the best in the world was being competitive, but it was being obsessed with sport. And I guess then when you start going for trials with the likes of South East or Leinster or Ireland, right, like I really have a chance here. I guess for me, it was just about what can I do to up that chance and to up that possibility of me playing for my province or my country. Like I've always wanted to do it. Because I'm just a girl from Ballygarrett that just is obsessed with rugby.
Aoife, we're here in one of your homes of rugby in Wexford and Enniscorthy, but that's not where your journey did start. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my journey started in Gorey RFC when I was about 6 years old. My brothers actually made a deal with my mum that if they finished their swimming lessons that they could start rugby. They eventually did them all and she had to bring them down to the rugby club. And myself and my two younger siblings were just dragged along every Sunday morning, whether it was raining or whether it was sunny. Every single week I was like, I want to play rugby, I want to go out and I want to play and I want to throw the ball around and I want to run around. And she was like, you can't, there's no girls team.
There was only the boys' teams for Aoife that Aoife or anybody that in her position could join. And there would have been a sprinkling of other girls along other teams as well. It was just the times we were in that I suppose women's rugby was there, and there was a strong women's team in Gorey, but maybe not so much then in terms of, going out to the younger ranks. It would be a different situation now than what it would have been back in the day.
And eventually, 6-year-old me turned around to her and was like, I'd be better off running around out there than getting cold in here.
We went up to, I think it was Kevin was the coach at the time, and asked Kevin, and he said, yeah, no problem, but she has to lose her earrings. So we took the earrings out the following week and she went in and she played rugby, and that was the start of it. Every chance she got then, she was playing hurling, football, rugby, and she just loved it.
Whether it was a drop ball and you pick it up and you go and you score a try, and all of a sudden the lads are like, all right, this girl's got something about her, like this girl can actually play. And then it's a thing of, we don't want the girl to keep scoring tries, so we actually do have to tackle her. To be fair to the coaches, they were so supportive and they really kind of included me in everything. And the lads were my biggest supporters once I kind of was ingrained in their squad. Like I can remember it would be at blitzes and other teams would have their coaches laughing and they'd be like, run down the wing, there's a girl on the wing and all this crack. And our coaches would just fold their arms and start laughing back at them and go on, I dare you.
From my recollections of time, there would have been no drama involved with Aoife being involved with the lads. There may be certain practicality side of things, be it before and after matches and trainings, whatever. But outside of that, when it came to the whistle being blown and she's on the pitch and she's in with the lads, she would just do what was expected of her and more. And certainly, I suppose, maybe more that side of maybe the dynamic might have come into play with opposition teams, where they might have thought, God, have a girl, there's a girl facing across from me, I might have an easy day today. It would be a rude awakening there very, very, very quickly.
And when you went into it, I know you said that, you know, other coaches would be like, oh, there's a girl on the wing now, you can run down that way. And your coaches would be laughing at that stage because they knew what you were capable of. But were you aware of it at that stage, or did that kind of come a little bit later on as a reflection point?
To me, I was just another player on the team. And like, I knew that I would kind of be singled out for being a girl, because like you have all the stereotypes of girls not being fast enough or strong enough. I think I was lucky enough that the team I was on was actually really good. Like it's gone on to produce a lot of people who've gone on to Leinster, gone on to South East teams and that kind of thing. So yeah, like I don't think I really kind of realised what was going on or what was the start of, but yeah, I just kind of stuck with it and kept working at it, I guess.
A lot of female sports people will go through that where they have to play with boys up to a certain extent because there aren't female teams for them to play on, and then get to maybe like under 15s, under 16s, and then you have to move on. What do you think that kind of showed you skills wise?
It just really put more of an emphasis on my skills, because like as we started growing up, like the lads did get stronger and they did get faster, but I still had to adapt to that, and like I was still growing too, to be fair. But like I was put into so many different positions in terms of like when we actually got positions. So like I was never a forward because I was always smaller than the lads, and like you kind of have to still be able to boss your corner and to really fight for everything that you do get, because like the lads aren't going to give it to you easily. Like it's still with me that like I fight for everything that I want. But yeah, probably just that competitive edge really stayed with me. Because yeah, like every boy that was on that team wanted to play for Ireland and they wanted to play for Leinster, and I was no different.
I suppose as a youngster, and being one of the only girls on the pitch at the time, that the easy option is to throw her on the wing and try and protect her and keep her out of harm's way. But I think that her attitude was, nah, hang on a second, I want to get stuck in here. I want the ball in my hands. I want to be tackling people. And I think that attitude has really flourished coming through the age grades and now into the international scene. And it's a real big attribute as a back rower as well, is that willingness to get stuck in and really go hard after the ball and hard after the contact zones. I think that attitude as a you know, 6, 7, 8 year old, it hasn't left her.
For me, at the beginning, it was a little bit terrifying seeing the boys basically run at her. I think because she was the third child and she had two older brothers, she managed well. Because when she was smaller and able to walk, they used to convince her, come on out and play with us in the front garden. And she thought this was great, her two older brothers wanting to play with her. To say that probably stood to her in the long run and made her become hardy. So no, I think the fear for me went at an early age.
Do you remember when you were a kid, I suppose, having that switch moment in your head where you were like, okay, I know I'm really good at this, but actually I could be something more, like I can actually make this a career for myself?
I think it was probably a couple of moments that added up into one, I guess. Like when you're growing up, like you can always tell when there's something that could be happening, because like you'd be playing like Gory or Ennis Gorty for me, and like I was running in a couple of tries, or like I was kicking off both feet, or like I was hitting conversions that like I probably surprised myself with a few times, or like making big tackles. And like there's moments in games when you're a kid when you're like, okay, like this is something that could be a possibility. And I guess then when you start going for trials with the likes of South East or Leinster or Ireland, it's like, right, like I really have a chance here. And I guess for me it was just about, what can I do to up that chance and to up that possibility of me playing for my province or my country?
Immediately she came into the room asking, what can I do to get on this team? What do I need to do? So unfortunately she was only 15 years of age at the time and was too young. So she was ineligible for selection. So that was a hard conversation straight off the bat with her. So that's really what stood out for me was her immediate desire to be a world-class athlete.
Like whether it was extra skill sessions by myself, or whether it was, I don't know, like doing run sessions before school or gym sessions after school when I was only a kid. I think it's probably those kind of moments. And then once you start getting to the likes of the pathways, it just really becomes a thing in your sight that you just really want to grab?
But certainly, I suppose a real eye-opening moment would have been when we would have gone to the Connemara Cup. Her rugby that weekend was absolutely spectacular, and I distinctly remember even the one of the major matches that she would have had that weekend, where even you could hear opposition parents or coaches pointing her out, and you'd walk up and down the sideline, you could hear comments or even just some people saying to me that she's amazing. And at that stage, you're thinking, yeah, actually, there really could be something in this.
It's difficult enough going through leaving cert cycles, junior cert cycles, whatever it is, and also adding all that extra work on top of it.
Yeah, like it's something that I probably struggled with more at the start of playing sports, because like I was doing so many sports under the sun. Like I was athletics, I was swimming, surf lifesaving, I was rugby, GAA, and like with GAA, like I was coming up through the Wexford ranks, and then with rugby, like I was starting to make a name with South East and that kind of thing at underage. If I want to do something, I'm going to do everything in my power to be able to do it, and it just means being more organised. So like I'm sure like Mam and I definitely had a lot of arguments of, you have to get your homework done, because if not you can't go to rugby or you can't go to music. And she probably helped a lot when I was growing up through it, and eventually then I had to pick a sport.
She was 11 and the Gaelic football coach said to her, Aoife, you're going to have to make a choice, either rugby or football. And without any sort of prompting from me or anything, she turned and she said,
if you make me pick, you're going to lose me and I won't come back. And he never asked again. So, yeah, like I think I always knew I wanted to play for Ireland, and like it was always going to be something that I knew I had to try and balance with, because I knew I also wanted to do really big things in college, whether it was physio or like medicine or something like that.
Now studying physio in UCD, which is incredibly high points, but then you're also getting calls from Ireland camp saying, actually, Aoife, we want you to come join us as well. Like, what was that experience like?
Before the exams finished, like before the year was out, my mum got a call. I can remember I got into the car after she got the call, and she just didn't drive on, and I was like, there's something going on here. I was like, what's up? And she was like, I got a call today.
When we hung up the phone, it was sort of, oh my God, I've just had a phone call from Anthony Eddy, and he's asked Aoife in to the sevens.
And I kind of just looked at her and I was like, yeah, no, you're joking. And she's like, no, I'm dead serious. They want you in after you're leaving cert, and they'll have a contract for you and that kind of thing. And she looked at me, she's like, but you have to do your leaving cert.
It's always been a thing that no matter which of the kids were playing sport, that if their study went down, the sport had to take a back seat. We never said to them that you can't play your sport because you have your leaving cert coming up or your junior cert coming up. That they needed the balance. And for their headspace, they needed to be able to go outside and let off steam. They've always been told that, yes, you can go out and play and you can have a great game, but you're one injury away from not playing anymore.
We're privileged to wear that Irish jersey, but it doesn't last forever. And at the end of it, like, you have to have something in your back pocket. And who knows, like your last game could be tomorrow, and hopefully it's not, but you have to have something to fall back on, I guess. And it was always really important for her. So I knew that if I did my leaving cert, I'd be going into an Irish setup. It was just a matter of, right, I'm going to go to do my best in these exams and I'm going to get the course that I want. And then I get to go into an Irish camp and play with my heroes.
Have you ever felt like you've suffered from imposter syndrome?
All of a sudden being surrounded by all these absolute athletes, being a professional setup, I knew that, like, I had to put in a lot of work if I wanted to pull on that green jersey. That was probably the first and only time I'd say I've experienced it so far.
Aoife sort of stands out to me, again, just through that tenacity and that desire, that insatiable hunger to be better. I haven't come across too many athletes like her that have the physical and the mental attributes to go along with the humility as well. You know, and openly saying, I want to be the best back rower in the world, even as a 15-year-old, spoke volumes to me about what she wanted to achieve individually.
It was an absolutely insane day, my first day in camp, because the girls were actually at the World Cup qualifiers in Parma, and I was still watching them on the telly. And I went into the sevens change room, and they have pictures of the squad up, and the room is really nicely decorated, and above the lockers they have everybody's name. And I remember going around, and it was like Eve Higgins, Emily Murphy-Crowe, or Emily Koskin now, Lucy Mulhall, like all these absolute legends of the game. And my name was right beside them. And it was such an insane feeling, because I was like, oh my God, I'm so out of my depth right now. Because I was 17, 18, and I was sitting beside the names of these legends, and I haven't even met them yet. But for me to kind of outgrow that and to kind of come past it, it was nearly just a thing of, right, go back to what I know, and I know how to be a nerd, and I know how to be curious, so I'm gonna get down to that. And then it was a case of, I just worked every day, and I knew what my goal was, and that was to be the best in the world, so I knew what I had to do to try and get that. And I think ever since that kind of time, no, I haven't felt it, because I know I've put in the work, and I know that like my family backs me, my friends back me, my teammates back me.
I think that determination was always there, but it was just making sure that she could get the best out of herself. She's in a really good family format here, and older brother is probably an element of competition as she was growing up, and if they can do it, I can do it. There's an excellent pedigree within the wider family from a rugby point of view.
And you had that difference of going into the seven setups and then going into the 15s. Was it always, did you mind which one you were involved in all that much, or was it just the Irish jersey performing on an international stage that was the goal?
I don't think I really minded at the time, to be honest, because I think I needed sevens, because like I said, I was so young, and my skills probably weren't as developed as what they should have been to try get on the team. So when you're in sevens, you have to be able to tackle, you have to be able to pass, like you have to be strong and fast. So like it really puts an emphasis on your basic skills, because if you can't do that, then you let the team down, because if you can't tackle, it's probably going to be a try. So like I think I needed sevens to make me a better player. And to be honest, like I don't think I'd be sitting here if I didn't have sevens at the start of my career. I went to a few tournaments in France. I went to Dubai, and I was always kind of around the squad and training with them and that kind of thing. And then in 22, I got the nod to go across to the 15s. And I got my first cap versus Italy. It was such a highlight of my career, having my family down in Cork, and then getting a turnover, and the feeling of the whole team coming over to just pat me on the back or give me a tap on the head was unbelievable, because like I was 18, 19 at this stage, and you're playing against the Italians in Cork in front of fans in Musgrave. That was the dream. Then having my own little private concert, I suppose, on Musgrave Park when the coach came out with my cap and wanted to present it in front of everyone that was in Musgrave was pretty special, and having to do my first cap in front of my family and in front of every single fan that stayed behind to support the team.
It was a busy weekend because her younger sister Orla was in Scotland with the under-18s. So that weekend I can remember going over to Orla's match, watching Orla play for Ireland, and then coming home and watching Aoife line out on the senior panel, to just see her out on the pitch and think, yeah, she's made it. The two jerseys are upstairs, Aoife's and Orla's. Both played for Ireland on the same weekend and both wore the number 20 jersey.
Went back in sevens and it was the week off and I tore my hamstring. So I went from getting my first cap on the Saturday or Sunday to tearing my hamstring and knowing it was really bad on the Thursday. You're going from the highest of highs, living out your childhood dream, to being back to, I don't know, square minus 10. Like it was, yeah, it was dreadful.
Do you remember the moments that happened, that you felt that tear happen? And did you know in that second that it was bad, or in your head we were just like, this doesn't feel good, but I'll have a little bit of hope that it's not as bad as I think it is?
No, I remember the exact moment. I can replay it in my head, and I could probably describe every single detail of it. From when I had my college presentation in UCD to driving over, thinking it was just a normal day, to then going out for a normal training session, and one of the girls kicked the ball through. I'd called for the kick through because I'd spotted space, and I just ran after the ball.
She went down. Grade 3 tear on her hamstring.
I couldn't move. Like, I tried to get up, and the physio then ran over and they just sent me inside. They were like, go back inside to the other physio. And I don't think I really understood how bad it was at this stage, because like I guess I was just really hopeful that it wouldn't be as bad, because it was the fallow week in Six Nations and the week after we were playing England, and I knew that my goal for that game was to start it because I wanted to go and start against England.
The team is out doing their training and doing their bits, and the rehabber is in rehab with the physio and the S&C, and that's it. That's as much contact as they have. So for her, I'd say it was a very, very lonely place.
I came back home to Wexford because I think we had a day off or something, and we've one of the recliner seats, and I pulled out the recliner and I was relaxing anyway. I had the game ready on, and I took off the game ready, and I was going in to make food or something. And I went to put the chair back in, and I couldn't. And my leg couldn't bring the chair back in. And that's when I knew. I was like, this isn't good. Because something's so simple. And I was like, this is really strange. So yeah, I got the results then at a scan. And like, I think originally it was only meant to be 16 weeks or so. I'd be back for the likes of competing for the Sevens World Cup or competing for Sevens World Series spots or that kind of thing. But it just kept going wrong. I'd nearly get back and I'd be playing in training, or I'd be doing a rehab run and it'd go again, or it just wouldn't feel right. And all of a sudden, 16 weeks became over 560 days. It was probably one of the worst moments in my life, I'd say, because it was just so challenging. Not like physically, yes, but mentally it was torture, because I was Aoife, the rugby player, and all of a sudden I wasn't a rugby player anymore.
It was a dark time at times. We knew she was going through hell, both mentally and physically. But we couldn't take that pain away from her. It was hard watching her go through it. Yeah, it's a long-term injury. It's devastating, not only for the person that's injured, but for the family as well.
That injury really killed me, because I just really wanted to be out on the pitch. I just wanted to do normal things, even just going to the gym or going for a run. And I couldn't. And I think losing that bit of identity was something that I hadn't really dealt with yet, as like growing up through the pathway, and I'd had injuries and that kind of thing, but it was always a case of I had an injury, and if I was on crutches, I still just went around the field on crutches trying to be in a defensive line, whereas this time I couldn't. And I went into a really dark spot, and like I really didn't think I was going to get out of it, to be honest. And I was really lucky that the likes of the physio team or the medical team knew something was up and sent me for more help, because, I don't know where I'd be without them.
A couple of years ago, the hamstring one that seemed to just linger a lot longer than everybody would have liked to have anticipated. Speaking to her over those number of months, there was frustration. There was a level of just not understanding, what was going on in the body and why it wasn't getting any better. She was doing all the rehab, everything that everybody was asking of her, and it still just didn't seem to allow her to get to over that little hump of returning to play, and then missing the few key fixtures that she would have missed. And again, the frustrations of that. There's moments in there where she looks at it and says, you know, does it get any better? Which would have been heartbreaking, and seeing the level of frustration on the face. I know that it is heartbreaking for her. But then, you know, moments like what you see recently where she has overcome those injuries and she is on the pitch for a consistent period of time, that family to fall back on, and seeing that level of interest and support that they've given Aoife, and especially at times when she's, you know, had the injuries and those little setbacks.
I'm so grateful for my family and my friends and my team. I think having sport taken away from me really made me realise that there's more to life as well. I was and I still am obsessed with sport and obsessed with rugby in particular. But I think having that taken away from me just made me realise that, like, I have to find something else to be able to occupy my head, because if not, like, it's not going to go well. And I think it kind of developed different outlets, like my photography or my music.
When the injury happened, she needed an outlet, but she also needed to stay part of the team and to be close to the girls, because they spend so much time together when they're training and when they're in camp that they nearly become their second family. So I think the photography balanced both, that she could take the camera off and go down to the beach, because we live very close to the beach, and she'd go down there and she'd snap off a few photographs down there. And then when she feels that she needed to contact with the girls, she could go into the HPC and she'd go on the sideline and she'd take the photographs.
Like, I felt really isolated and kind of not part of a team anymore. But I suppose when you take photos, you're still giving back to the team and you're still giving them moments and memories that they can hold on to. And you still get to be in the likes of huddles and on the pitch and that kind of thing. So it was important for me to still feel part of the team. And then with music, I grew up in music, I suppose. I was very lucky that Mam started me off with the likes of a tin whistle, then that progressed to the flute, it progressed to classical flute, and then the Ullinbipes. So yeah, like, I'm really lucky to have it, because it's something that stays with me. And like, I bring the tin whistle everywhere I go, because it's so small and you can just throw it in your case. And like, I was in Canada and I was playing tunes, or like for my first cap with Leinster, I just pulled out the whistle and I played a few tunes on the bus. So it's really relaxing, and yeah, it just takes me away from rugby, I suppose, and out of the real world.
Yeah, the red scrum cap, it's I know for a fact that it's part of teams' analysis against Ireland, is that wherever that red scrum cap is, make sure your attention is focused on that area. And again, it speaks volumes of how impactful Aoife is on the pitch. You know, having access to friends and colleagues that coach at national level in other teams, and to hear them speak about somebody in that level of detail and that they scheme specifically for that red scrum cap is very interesting to hear.
So when I was younger playing with the boys, I thought it was a great idea to hide my hair in a scrum cap. Now I had hair down to my bum and it was bright blonde, so like, there was no way I was going to hide it with a little bit of headgear. It kept me happy, and my mum got one anyways, and sure, like, you could still see my hair, but it didn't matter to me, because to me I was just more part of the lads team now. When I was 15 or 16, it was my birthday, and my mum was kind of like, what would you like for your birthday? And I was like, I don't really need anything, like, I think I'm all good. And She was like, okay, well, I think your scrum cap's a bit grubby, like, she wants a new one.
So I went out, but the only ones I could get were red ones, and I said, she might not wear it. But I bought it and brought it home, and she wore it, and it's sort of, if she's getting a new scrum cap now, she won't wear anything but red. Nanny, who was a little bit ill at the time, was able to pick her out on the television and go, yeah, okay, she's wearing the red scrum cap.
Yeah, like back when she was with us, like, she picked it out on the telly, and I remember like my uncle telling me that she used to give out mad when someone else was wearing a red scrum cap, and they might not even be wearing the same colour jersey as me. Like, they could be wearing a white jersey and she'd still be giving out. But yeah, like, I guess it was just her way of picking me out when she was supporting me.
It's really nice to have that. And as you said, having gone through such a tough time, having that sort of family support and her knowing that you got back on the pitch.
Yeah, no, like, that was definitely in my head, because I can still remember the day that I was told, like, we were obviously out in Dubai playing in WXV3. I remember sitting down in the lobby and I was just having a normal conversation with one of the girls, and my mom and sister came through the hallway and they were in the floods of tears. I had said to the girl, I was like, I'm going to bring them upstairs, but like, I'll be back in a while. But as soon as we hit the elevator, I knew what had happened. And we got to the room anyways, and yeah, they told me, and it was really hard because I wanted to go home and I wanted to be with my family and I wanted to be there, I suppose, for her funeral and that kind of thing. But I knew as well she'd probably kill me if I went home and I didn't play the game. So I knew that it was something that I had to do. And I remember telling our manager, Elaine, and our head coach, Scott, and I remember barely getting the words out, but they straight away, like, they hugged me and they offered me everything under the sun in terms of if I want to fly home, they'd cover it. If I wanted to play the game, they'd support that. And they supported me every day that weekend. And
it was sad in a way because we had lost Nanny, but in another way it was a blessing that Aoife was back on the pitch, and we always maintained that Nanny was looking down on her and minding her that night.
Even knowing that my Nan had passed away, knowing I'd got back into a green jersey was something that I think is one of my proudest moments of my career. And then the likes of sending my scrum cap home with my mum to stay with my Nan, but like, it's moments like that that I think I might not have appreciated fully when, like, before my hamstring injury.
That's incredible and so beautiful that you're able to have that for her. And I'm sure she's looking down every single game that you've played since then, incredibly proud. How did you, I suppose, move on is the wrong word, but how did you, I suppose, grow from that situation as well? Because it's one thing being in the moment and having to play games and just get through the camp or whatever it is, but then you come home and reality hits a little bit more.
When I got back to playing rugby, like, it just made me appreciate every single little moment every bit more, because it's like my second cap came like so much longer than I expected after my first. For me, I just had to try blank it out and try just be the best version of me for the team on the day. And then post game, it was really emotional because we'd just won WXV3. We had this cup that we were celebrating with. We were in the huddle doing songs. We were doing all this thing. But to me, my Nan had still passed away. I took a couple of days to kind of just be with my family and that kind of thing. And then it was a case of, I don't know, like, life moves on and you have to be able to deal with it. So, yeah, I just got back to work, I suppose, and back to trying to be the best version of me.
The accolades that she's sort of achieved individually, you know, with the Six Nations Player of the Tournament. She's been recognised as a world-class rugby player. The All-Ireland League, where she was, you know, maybe not on the pitch, but played a massive part in her team. And then obviously the multiple Leinster championship winning teams that she's been part of at an underage level, and also a senior level, that she's picked up a number of those medals as well.
Obsession to me is probably just doing absolutely everything in your power to be able to do whatever you want to do, because for me that was playing for Ireland or playing for Leinster. I wanted to make my family and friends proud, and I wanted to do something really, really special, and it was never going to be a question. It was always just going to be that I was going to do it, and it was a matter of when. I know that I've put in the work to be where I am, and I'm not quite done with what I want to do yet, but I know that I have a lot of work to keep putting in if I want to keep achieving the goals that I have set out.
Yeah, impactful moments that Aoife has in matches and things, you know, the French match in Kingspan this year where she breaks off the back of a mall and runs over the top of their number eight, really demonstrated her strengths as a back row. Aoife's flexibility to be able to play six, seven and eight and demonstrate the different skill sets of those different positions. You know, from a number eight's point of view and ball carrying and linking in with the backs, that moment of breaking off and running over the top to score the try. And then as a number seven, when she's making tackles and getting back on her feet and really quickly over the top of the ball to try and steal the ball back, you know, two contrasting, you know, playing styles, but she's been able to really master those.
How does the pressure that you're facing as the potential you face of Irish rugby, we won't put the full pressure on you, how does that differ to stepping out on the pitch?
I think it's an interesting one because I think off field to me, and like you'll probably see it with my parents and my family, like I'm just a kid from Ballygarrett that just loves rugby. So like to them, they still get a kind of like, I wouldn't say a buzz, but they still kind of get shocked if I get stopped in the street and it's like, could we have a photo? And they're like, what do you want a photo with Aoife for? Like, it's like, she's just an ordinary person. But I think we're all starting to realise it's something a little bit bigger than that.
Yeah, I think the fact that she has come up through minis and played her minis and her youth and everything like that, that the young girls can see that this is the progression, and if I start, I can progress to this, and the pathways are there now as well. And I think it's majorly important that the younger girls like Aoife and some of the other players do go back to the clubs and do encourage the kids to play.
Fairness, I met Aoife recently down at Gorey Community School, and her sister was having her sixth year graduation ceremony. Aoife's down there, people are going up shaking her hands, or they want to get selfies with her, etc., which is kind of, you're looking and thinking, this is nuts. I remember her running around the pitch up in Gorey, and now there's people looking for selfies with her and talking about be it either Leinster experiences, Ireland experiences, and now obviously looking, going on to World Cup later in the year and the move to Harlequins.
I had 3 or 4 caps to my name, and I'd got this message from one of the clubs, and it was like, would you be interested? And I replied with, yeah, I'd be interested. Like an opportunity to play against the best of the best in a league in England. Like why would you say no?
Her move to Quinns is no surprise, to be honest. For her to go across now at the tail end of a World Cup, I think is perfect timing in terms of the level of competition on and off the pitch that she'll get. That competition has some of the best female athletes in the world.
It was a massive decision. It took a lot of time to try and make, and a lot of going back and forth. And I suppose at the end of 2024, I decided it wasn't the right time for me because I was like, I don't think I've done what I wanted to do in Ireland.
As time went on, I could see that she needed to go for the competitiveness of the rugby and to take it one step further. She needs to go.
But I think right now it's the right time for me because, like I said, I want to be the best in the world, and I think that Quinns can really help me be that. And then obviously I still come home and I play with the girls for the likes of international camps if I get picked. So like, I think being able to test myself with and against the best in the world is something that I need in my career right now. And like, it's going to be a massive challenge, but like, I've never shied away from a challenge. So yeah, I guess I'm just going to bring my curious self to it again. But yeah, I don't think I'll ever forget what I've come from. The things that I'd probably miss would be the likes of even just going down to sessions in the pathways and with the likes of Leinster and Ireland, and like, I love going down and coaching.
She will always, even from the time she was little, before she was on any programmes or anything like that, she would have gone into Gorey, and I think she did her first minis coaching course and took a group of under sevens, and she really enjoyed that, and she's gone on and she's done her coaching badges now, and she has those. She would have coached area teams as well as played them. And it's great for the girls to say that they had a coach that has gone through the pathway. That a few years ago she was captaining the under 18 Leinster team. And for the girls to see that, I think if you can't see, you can't be.
And I think that Aoife is really a pretty clear indication of that. And especially over the last couple of years, while she's been performing on the pitch, her impact off the pitch is insane.
Like I've always said to myself that I don't want to just be a figure on a television screen, that like I want to be out there, because for me growing up with the women's team, like they came to the clubs with the likes of trophy tours in 2017, or they went around when they'd won Grand Slams and when they'd won Six Nations, and I felt like I knew them as an 8-year-old kid. I felt growing up I didn't know the men's team, that they were untouchable, that they you only saw them when they were on the telly, and I didn't want that for myself. When we're in camp and when we're in an Irish setup, you don't always fully know how much of a role model you are until you meet a young girl and you see how buzzing they are to just be beside you. And it's a feeling that's so hard to describe, because I was that girl that was standing beside people and asking for photos and asking for autographs and stopping people in the street and being like, I know who you are. And they're like, how do you know who I am? Because Irish rugby wasn't very big back then. And the Irish women's team, I don't think fully appreciate how much of an effect they had on the next generation. We know we're role models, but we don't always feel like it sometimes. But we know that we want to inspire the next generation, and it's something that we speak about a lot. And we want to inspire them to like pick up a rugby ball or pick up, I don't know, any sort of sport, because it's important.
I would definitely like to see her captaining her country. I definitely think that she's got the rugby intellect. I think that she's got the hunger and the desire to lead her country. Just with the way that she looks about the game, the way that she interacted with other players, with other people, the way that she was first in the building, last out of the building. She's always on the video analysis, trying to find ways in her own game, but also then trying to find ways that she can impact for other people. And that's for me what a captain is all about, is how can I help somebody else make an impact? And she's always had that mentality.
You always dream of certain moments in rugby, so the likes of beating the Black Ferns, or the likes of facing a Haka, or lifting a World Cup trophy. And for me, growing up in rugby, they were all dreams that I had. I think knowing that like Ireland didn't qualify for the 2021 World Cup, and the last one we played was the 2017 World Cup in Ireland, it's sad, like, because like Ireland deserved to be the best in the world, and the girls have put it in the work to do that. So I think this World Cup is really exciting, because, well, we're not really an unknown identity anymore, but there is that thing of like when we show up on our day, I reckon we could beat anybody. It really would be a dream come true to be able to compete in a World Cup, and like we really want to go do something special, and hopefully we'll be able to get that green wave over there as well, because like it's only across the water, so why not come support it?